God, THED 4INEFOUNDATION 39. General manager of Cosmos, man invariably discovers that the task is far too arduous, and so eventually returns to God his universe. Modern thought, which is basically skeptical, declares God to exist only when discovered. As yet, however, none has discovered deity. The only discovery thus far made is the absolute necessity of a first cause, and this paramount need for such a supreme activity is conclusive proof of the existence of such a force or being. To summarize, the modern world bases its entire philosophy of life upon the reality of the visible, whereas the ancient world conceived the invisible to be the real. Thus we have two diametrically opposing viewpoints. In the final analysis, it is evident that the viewpoint of antiquity is correct. In the first place, the visible is actually such a small part of existing nature. It is inconceivable that it should be accorded a position of first importance. All bodies float in a vast sea of space, forming but a fractional part of the contents of this great sphere of being. The invisible life must be superior to its vehicle of manifestation. Therefore, the great reality life cannot actually be considered a part of the phenomenal universe. It is a strange but fundamental truth that the least permanent thing in the universe is a rock, and the most permanent is so-called empty space, for the time will come when the rock will cease to be, but space will never pass away. Form can be destroyed and is ever-changing, but space, by its very nature, is indestructible and forever the same. We now come to the nature of emptiness. Emptiness merely implies the absence of form, but the formless active agent, being all-permeating, fills all existence. You may pour the water out of a glass and then declare the glass to be empty, because apparently it contains nothing. Any scientist, however, will assure you that the empty glass contains a sufficient number of atoms to blow the Earth out of its orbit if their combined energy could be properly directionalized. Emptiness, therefore, is paradoxically an incomprehensible fullness. Philosophically considered, the absence of form means impossibility of destruction. That which has no form cannot have the form. 40 lectures on ancient philosophy. Taken away, emptiness, so-called, is consequently more permanent than fullness. In its conventional sense, fullness means that the container is filled to capacity with physical elements. The true fullness, however, is that area which is completely filled with spiritual and eternal agencies. Of such a nature is space, which, far from being empty, may be likened to a spiritual solid, whereas the physical world may be best described as a spiritual vacuum. According to the Platonists, all the creations manifesting outward from the nature of God are arranged in the order of their proximity to first cause. Those nearer the source of life partake more of the celestial effulgence than those more distant. In other words, the light radiating from a flame more closely resembles the flame at the source than at the extremity of its rays. The order of the gods is therefore determined by their proximity to the central creative fire of the universe, which is termed the altar of Vesta or the tower of the All-Wise Father. The gods are not to be considered as independent entities or forces, but rather as monads with numerous subordinate powers and intelligences dependent upon them. Each deity is, in turn, a dependency of a superior being, until at last all unite in a common dependency upon the benevolence of first cause. Thus each individual deity may be symbolized by the dot, the line, and the circle. As a dot, each god is the central monad of a host of inferior dependencies, as a line, each god is a streaming radiance nourishing its subordinate parts, and as a circle or circumference each god is a fractional part of a still greater monadic entity. The majesty of these divinities is there for established by the law of relativity. Each god is the father of a multitudinous progeny which exists within its own nature, and which must unquestioningly obey its dictates. Each deity is, in turn, part of the progeny of a still higher and more exalted power to which it renders homage. Thus each deity is both a creator and a creation in one. As man ascends the ladder, uniting effect with cause, he approaches ever closer to conscious realization of source. He therefore passes through the angelic choirs described by Dante in his Paradiso. These choirs in GODTHED4INEFUNDATION 41 concatenated circles about the flaming throne of the Eternal Father represent the orders of divine emanations. Thus the central flame is ever surrounded by a many-ringed nimbus of subordinate lights supporting all creation. Let us approach the problem of macrocosmic interdependency through a consideration of certain microcosmic realities. The human body may be considered either as a single unit or as a host of minute living organisms combining in accordance with certain definite laws. Each individual cell is a living and immortal creature, and it also has been definitely established that various organs of the human body possess at least a selective intelligence. Yet all these separate, living parts are suspended, as it were, from the single monad of the human heart. The heart is to the body what the sun is to the solar system and first cause to existence. If one of the cells within the body dies, the body still lives, but if the chief governing monad ceases to function, then all the cells or dependent parts partake of the general dissolution. As the life of the body is centralized in the heart, even though a general life is diffused through out the body, so, while life may be discovered in every creature existing in the manifested sphere, all these subordinate lives are swept to a common destruction if the great monad upon which they depend be removed. The lesser lives have their origin in the greater and must always remain its dependents. Deity as the first monad of the world is the foundation of the universe, the sacred island, sometimes analogous to Shambhala, the city of the gods. Upon this monad is erected all creation, with its dissolution the far-reaching and diversified phenomena collapse like a house of cards. Therefore God may be defined as that upon which a lesser part depends. Our God is the monad from whose nature we as lesser monads hang by hypothetical threads. Hence there are many gods, for all beings, both great and small, hang as dependencies upon the natures of superior forms of life. Next we must consider the philosophic principle of priority of a number of things related to each other. That which is fundamental is primary or first, and the rest are dependencies. 42 Lectures on Ancient Philosophy. For example, a ship may carry a large and diversified cargo. If any part of the cargo be thrown overboard, the safety of the ship is not necessarily endangered. If, however, the ship should sink, all its cargo goes down too. Thus the cargo depends upon the ship for its preservation, but the ship does not depend upon the cargo. The priority of either a science or a living organism is established by the degree of its fundamental importance to all other sciences and organisms. The destruction of priority automatically annihilates all its dependencies. If you destroy that which is first, that which is secondary also ceases. If you destroy that which is secondary, you in no way injure that which is first, you simply limit some phase of its manifes. Tashin. Pythagoras used the science of mathematics to illustrate the principle of priority. Remove mathematics and you destroy every form of human knowledge which is in any way dependent upon numbers or the theory of mathematics. 4. Example, consider the relationship between mathematics and music. The science of harmonics is wholly dependent upon mathematics. If you remove the knowledge of music from the world, you destroy a certain phase of mathematics, but the body of numbers is left uninjured. On the other hand, if you remove mathematics from the world, the entire theory of harmonics perishes. Of the two, mathematics is primary and music secondary. Another simple illustration, the tree has one trunk and many branches. The branches are dependencies of the trunk, for if one of the branches be removed, the life of the tree is not seriously impaired and the other branches remain unaffected. Destroy the trunk, however, and all the branches die together. In the search for knowledge, the highest wisdom is first to learn those things which have priority. To learn mathematics, for example, is to possess already a certain knowledge of all sciences, because it is the first among the sciences. For this reason the Greeks and Egyptians demanded of all disciples seeking initiation into the mysteries and understanding of mathematics. The identity of first things can be determined by applying the principle of priority. Things are considered of greater or lesser importance according to what they depend upon and GOD THED 4INEFUNDATION 43. What is dependent upon them? Man is master over those forms of life dependent upon him, but a slave to that infinity of forces which he depends upon for every expression and manifestation. The gods are merely symbolic representations of states of relative dependency. The gods are greater than man because they represent the members of existence upon which man depends. Such a chain of dependency is well represented by the institution of feudalism. A country was divided among a group of nobles whose relative importance depended upon the extent of their individual domains. A certain number of baronies constituted an earldom, and a group of earldoms, in turn, formed a dukedom. Above the dukedom was the principality, and over all the king, who on a smaller scale was the god of his nation. Greatness depends upon constructive and destructive power, destructive in the sense of changing rather than any highlighting. A further thought concerning the term dependency. Our hands and feet are dependent upon us for their animating principle, we are dependent upon them for the expression of certain innate desires and attitudes. Our hands and feet protect us, but they are obviously less than that which they protect. They may be likened to vassals or stewards. In the days of knighthood, when knights went into battle they were attended by esquires or stewards who rode behind their masters to free them from their heavy armor in the event they were unhorsed, or to arrange for a ransom with their conqueror. In ancient philosophy the gods represent the hands and feet and vital members of the cosmic body. Like the cherubim of the Jews, they run back and forth in the whirlwinds, executing the orders of the Most High even as our busy fingers carry out the dictates of our brain. The one supreme power manifesting throughout the cosmic organism should be considered as manifesting throughout all created things, each of which is a faculty or member of minor or major importance. An interesting story came to our attention of an East Indian pundit who was trying to explain to a rather bigoted Christian missionary the reason for the great number of heads appearing